But just because you can leap doesn't mean that everybody needs to go out there and practice it because you can do it. I think a lot of the pitchers that you're seeing that have a bigger leap, their bodies just kind of naturally do it. Maybe they're not even trying to do it, but that's just how their explosiveness, athleticism, their body moves. But nobody's saying, hey, get in the air with your leap. So we'll see how this continues to pan out. I feel like in years to come with what pitchers look like. However, I feel like a leap will lead to more replants, which is still illegal. Like you can't repush or replant after you leap. That still would be an illegal pitch.
Hey, I'm Ashley Agle. Some of you might know me as Ashley Burkhart, and I'm a former D1 and professional softball player who spent a few years coaching in the college game before deciding to put all of my focus into youth softball players and helping them make their dreams and their goals happen for them. It's our job to help them unleash their potential and become the athletes they've always dreamt of. I come from a small city in the Midwest and didn't let that stop me from making my goal of playing D1 softball a reality. No matter where you live, you have the tools to help you thrive, and I am hoping through this podcast to help you get there. On this podcast, you'll learn from Olympians, Hall of Fame coaches, and elite players what their journeys have been like, and you'll also learn from me and my family a bit of our journey through the game. I'm so excited to have you here, so whip out your notebook and let's learn how we can grow in this game together. Welcome to When the Cleats Come Off.
What is up, fam? Welcome back to another episode of When the Cleats Come Off. I am so excited. I have a returning guest today, and you know her, you love her. Her name is Amanda Scarborough. I call her the voice of softball for a reason, because if you're listening to some of the top matchups, she's normally on the call. You may know her from her work with the Pitching Angel. You may know her from being on the podcast before, where we talked all about pitching, all about confidence on the mound. If you haven't listened to that episode and you love Amanda, I'm going to make sure to put that episode in the show notes so you can listen. But today, she is coming on to talk about what it's like being an analyst for collegiate softball, what we can expect this season, the things she's looking for in games, and so much more. Today in our conversation, you're going to learn the preparation that it takes for softball analysts to be prepared for their games. And it's probably a lot more work than you think. I was shocked to learn all of the things that Amanda has to do to prepare. She also talks a lot about pitchers and what we can expect from them this season. When we were recording this, we were fresh out of the Clearwater invite. And if you watch that, it was an offensive powerhouse. She talks about how her theory on why she thinks that hitters were so great, and from a pitching perspective, why they weren't so great. And I love her perspective here because I look at the hitters all the time, but she's constantly looking at pitchers, and her insight on pitchers is always gold. She's also sharing some of her favorite pitchers to follow and the ones that she likes to watch most. And this part, I had to ask. There are so many new rules in the game this year, like pitchers can actually get off the ground this year. There's a pitch clock. There's so many new elements of the game. And I wanted Amanda to share some of those rules that we can expect and whether she likes them or not. Fun fact, she doesn't like them all. We also talk about how people can watch the game. So if you're one that's like, I can never figure out where these games are, we dive into that. And also she shares with us some predictions that she sees for the 2024 season. So basically, if you love college softball, this is your episode. So let's give a warm welcome to Amanda Scarborough, who's back on the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. Returning guest Amanda Scarborough is here. Welcome back.
Hi, thanks. Let's talk some softball.
Yes, please, because you're the voice of softball right now. We're coming off of Clearwater, which sadly, a bunch of games got rained out. But from your perspective, how did those go?
They were really competitive and very high scoring. that was definitely the takeaway, was all the offense and not a lot of pitching. So games were long, games were high scoring. There were a lot of walks, hit by pitches, extra base hits, and just runs in general. So that was definitely the takeaway from Clearwater. Got in half the games on Thursday and Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday, or most of Saturday, got rained out, and all of Sunday, unfortunately.
I know, that's such a bummer, because you do all this prep, which is definitely something that I wanted to ask, because I don't think people understand the life of a reporter, an announcer, an analyst. It takes a lot of work behind the scenes to prepare for games. Like, can you give me a week? And like, because I know you just told me before we started recording, you're going to have a lot of coaching and team calls tomorrow. Like, what does prep look like for you for these games?
So before we have our coach call, because we have a coach call with every head coach of every team before we have their games on TV, which is great because we talk to them for like 30 or 45 minutes. Before, I usually like to do some prep to look at their stats, their schedule, their wins, their losses, their returners, check in to see who's on their coaching staff, and also who they lost last year. So just kind of like taking an overview look at their team before we even talk to their coach. Then we get to ask their coach anything and everything. Like, we get to find out about their hitters, about their pitchers, about what they think about their season up to this point. I mean, literally, we can ask them absolutely anything, which is really cool, because I just always like to learn, because every head coach is so different with what they tell us, what they look for, how they prepare, and what they give for us to look for in games too, which is fun. Then usually after that, I like to dive into 643charts.com, which we've gotten access to for the past couple of years. It has like any kind of stat that you could ever want of any of the Division I teams. So offensive stats, pitching stats, then you have heat maps, and you also have video in there, Ash, through Synergy, which like wow. You can go and watch video on any pitcher or hitter in the entire country. So then I like to do that after we talk to the coach and just kind of have an idea of what to look for and pull out some good nuggets for there for the broadcast.
That's so great. I think it's like just really fun to see how you've done the homework on like even pitchers that come in, like maybe they're number three or they're number four. Like, you literally have to have information on every player, even ones that you don't even expect, you know, to pop in the game, which is pretty awesome and unique.
Especially because of how big the pitching staffs are these days. That has changed since I first started calling games, when you only really had to prep for like two, maybe three pitchers. And now, you know, like UCF has a pitching staff of like seven or eight pitchers. So, and then a lot of depth in their roster, like pinch hitters coming off the bench. So it's like, you're not just preparing for 9 or 10 hitters. You're preparing for 13 or 14 hitters who might be used. Like, teams are so much deeper, rosters are so much bigger, and pitching staffs are so much bigger.
Okay. Speaking of pitching staffs, I agree. I feel like in order to even compete at all, you have to have like three really great pitchers that all do different things. And as a pitcher yourself, let's talk pitching a little bit, because I know a lot of the best stuff I hear from you live is like what you notice from pitchers, from like a poise perspective to what do you think they're going to throw in certain situations. What do you see right now within the game, and maybe just the games that you've called and the ones that are coming up? Like, what can we expect from some of these pitchers?
Sadly, because there was so much offense that I saw last weekend, it's going to come from a more negative perspective on pitching. But pitchers have too many pitches that move, like that have good movement, but they can't command it. I heard that from a lot of coaches this past weekend, and about like just trying to get opinions about why there was so much more offense last weekend, and that pitchers are way off the plate. So like blatant balls that they're throwing, and then they have to come more on the plate to get back into the count and to challenge the hitter. And then they're able to barrel it up, and then they're finding themselves behind in counts and throwing a lot of pitches and giving the team a lot of different looks. So that is just like pitchers not being able to command the strike zone, like having really good stuff, but not being able to throw strikes. And doesn't this sound a lot like, I don't know, what we talked about when we talked about like pitching angel and pitching training and all this of like, you have to be able to command your pitches no matter how good your movement is, no matter how hard you throw. None of that stuff matters if you're throwing ball four or you're hitting the batter and giving them a free pass. So same song, different verse at the college level. And I think it was very exposed this past weekend.
Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of hitters coming from, or sorry, pitchers that were having to come from behind. And that's never a place that you want to be. I don't care if you're the hitter or the pitcher, like you always want to be ahead. And a lot of pitchers were behind and coaches were leaving them in games. I mean, the scores were so high. Why do you think coaches keep pitchers in when the audience might think they need to get out?
I think it has to do with it being a tournament weekend. Like, I think if it was a conference 3-game series on a weekend, you might see some faster changes like that. But coaches really have to protect their staffs to be able to save the rest of their pitchers for the next game or the next day. So I think that they're leaning on that pitcher who is in and just try to figure out how to get an out. So that way the rest of the pitchers who are on staff don't have to warm up that game and then have to throw again the next game. So I think they're just trying to protect their pitchers and see what the pitcher who is in the circle is made of. Like, see if she can figure out a way to get out of an inning. I actually saw a couple of times. So it's interesting.
Yeah. What pitcher stood out to you recently?
That's a good question.
In a good way.
You know, it was none of the pitchers that were on my field because all my games were high scoring, unfortunately. Yeah. Nyjah Kennedy looked great for Stanford. Carlin Pickens for Tennessee looked awesome. And then Tegan Kavan for Texas. I felt like Texas, Tennessee, and then Nyjah from Stanford probably looked the best. Like when you looked at the amount of runs that they gave up, it was a lot lower than everybody else. But I'm like just so scarred from that. Like I literally have to think about that because I did not have any of those teams. So when you're asking me about pitchers who stood out, it was not any that were on field 9, really. Like all of my games are just so high scoring. Kyra Acock from Oklahoma State threw a great game against Georgia, but yeah, those were really the ones.
I'm just as shocked. And I know everybody on the internet saying, oh, well, it's the new balls that they're using, like they're juiced or something. And I'm like, hitters have advanced. Like there are a lot of great technologies going into hitting. I mean, as a hitting coach, you know, part of me loves to see it. I guess the audience probably loves to see home runs. But I know from your perspective on the mound, that's like a nightmare. So it's good.
But I saw, but crazy. The thing was too, like there was a lot of great pinch hitting. Like all around, it was like the offense was so strong. Like I saw 3 pinch hit home runs in 2 days. So it's like hitters are coming off the bench ready to hit. Like the hitters were just ready this weekend. They were really prepared. And pitchers seem, you know, back on their heels a little bit. I'm sure pitching coaches had a few more gray hairs after this weekend in Clearwater than how they entered into Florida with.
Yeah. Do you see kind of this mellowing itself out throughout season, like less high scoring games throughout the year? Just this was just a very heightened weekend, it feels like.
I think it was. I want to believe that it was because we can't have games going 3 hours and having football scores. So I'm going to manifest it. That's just how it was this weekend. And that, like, I think the average combined runs in game and games in Clearwater Invitational was like 14 or 15 runs, like, which is just insane. So I'm going to say moving forward, pitchers are going to just wake up and we're going to be able to move forward and pitch at least a little bit better because offense is really great in our game right now.
Yeah. And even with the pitch count, these games were going so long just because of the offense. Can we talk a little bit about some of the new rules? Because I know I heard a lot on TV, like what some of those rules are that are kind of changing, like pitchers can, you know, get in the air a little bit. I would love for you as a pitcher to kind of be specific on what that means, because I know people are probably like, oh, yeah, they can jump as high as they want. But like technically, there's still a rule around it. But what are some of those new rules that we can expect to see implemented this year?
So the 3 biggest ones were the pitch clock that you mentioned. Believe it or not, there's never been an actual clock at our field before. Some of the games that you'll see this year, there will be. It won't be at every single field of every single game that you'll watch. But even last year, there was supposed to be an internal pitch clock in the umpire's head. And for years before that, it just had gotten really out of hand and wasn't really at all, but it was supposed to be 25 seconds. but it was left up to the home plate umpire. I believe it was under his discretion, which he or she has a million things going on back behind the plate. Just to add one more thing, but that 25 seconds just wasn't being enforced. So it became more like 35 or 40. And before you know it, I mean, that adds on a lot of time to the game. So this year the coaches got together and made the rule change to change it to 20 seconds from 25. And that with the potential of being able to put in a pitch clock at the fields. Again, that won't be at every game yet, maybe in years to come, but the pitcher has 10 seconds to get in the pitching rubber. The hitter has 10 seconds to get into the batter's box. And then after the pitcher gets on the pitching rubber, she has 10 seconds to get the signal and then start to deliver the pitch. If not, if they go over that 20 second mark, then it could be a ball on the batter or a strike on the batter as well, depending on who got the violation. So let's start there. That in itself made a difference in our game, I think, for sure, because games were just getting really out of hand, I think, with just all the time of fielders coming over to talk to the pitcher, a lot of catching timeouts, or just the pitcher gathering herself. So I felt like, especially in a weekend like this with all the offense, that pitchers really had to collect themselves very quickly, because even when you're slowing the game down in your mind and everything is going your way, 20 seconds can feel like a lot. When you are getting hit and things are going really quickly, people are getting on base, walks, hits, errors, whatever it is behind you, that 20 seconds starts to feel like 15, like 12, and your heart, like just controlling your heart rate even. And I do think the one thing that it affected was, like, I didn't see as many catcher-led timeouts. In fact, I don't think I had any on my field at all. You know what that's like, Ash, where it's like, The catcher will just call timeout just to go and pump up the pitcher for just a second, or like she falls behind 2-0 or 3-0 in an important situation, like timeout, go talk to her and get her back into the count, or just let her have a breath. I didn't see that at my field at all. And I thought that that was interesting and maybe more of a negative about it. And catchers just need to kind of take that initiative still and go and work with their battery mate.
I did think about that. As you were mentioning pitch clock, I'm like, wait, the person that's probably advantaging like the most is the pitcher, because she does get time to collect herself. Wow. What would you tell a pitcher who got rattled? Let's say, you don't have to be specific, but if you're in that situation, you're put on a pitch clock, you're now feeling rushed. What is something that you would prioritize if you were on the mound?
To be the one that takes initiative to call the timeout and have your catcher come out. And you can't do that like once a batter or anything, but to pick your moment to be able to do that, and to work on pitching quicker outside of games, to work on challenging yourself outside of games in the bullpen. And I'm sure all these pitchers are, to get used to it, but to do some kind of challenge like in the bullpen that makes your heart rate go up a little bit more, running in between pitches, like something that just gets your heart rate up, and having to work through that elevated heart rate and still make good pitches.
Taking a super quick moment from this episode to share with you a couple episodes that you actually might like if you're tuning into this one. First of all, let's go back to episode 77. I titled this one, Why You Should Be Watching College Softball, because I'm going to give you a little teaser. There is so much that athletes and coaches and umpires, literally anyone who loves the game, you can learn so much from simply watching. So episode 77 goes into that breakdown, along with episode 168 that I recently recorded. It goes over some of those similar concepts, but also a few more. Episode 126, this one is for my athletes here. I did an episode called 10 Things to Look For While Watching College Softball. Same premise, it's when you are in a specific position, I need you to hone in and try to find some sort of a role model on TV and go watch how she carries herself, how she plays the game. So that episode is for my athletes. Of course, you coaches and parents out there can learn a lot too from it. But that is a definite episode that you should be tuning into. Lastly, if you're a fan of some of these college coaches, my first ever interview was with my old coach, who is now the hitting coach for the University of Oklahoma, JT Gasso. He talks about how he works with his hitters, their championship mindset, and how that culture has become so strong. That's in episode 8. And also a recent episode we did giving some D3 some love here, first D3 coach ever to come on, was Donnie Dankelson. That was an amazing episode about culture. And ironically, they also won a national title last year. And there are so many similarities between him and D1 coaches that I love. Also, we recently had Pat Murphy on in episode 126. So go tune into that one because Alabama softball is looking very, very strong this year. All right, that is all I have to share with you. Just know that there are so many episodes in the archive, and you can also tune into those interviews on YouTube as well if you prefer watching these interviews. Thank you so much for your time. Let's head back to this episode with Amanda.
I love this insight. Were there any other rules that we missed?
The other one is that pitchers can leap, which means that both feet can be in the air. Before this year, that had been an illegal pitch and it caused a lot of controversy and just really opened a can of worms because pitcher's foot kind of will naturally come in the air sometimes without even meaning for it to. And so I'm still on the fence about how I feel about this, simply from the aspect of development. Just because you can doesn't mean that you should. So just because you can leap at any level now or whatever, the rules are just so different at every single level. That's another kind of like frustrating thing about it. But just because you can leap doesn't mean that everybody needs to go out there and practice it because you can do it. I think a lot of the pitchers that you're seeing that have a bigger leap, their bodies just kind of naturally do it. Maybe they're not even trying to do it, but that's just how their explosiveness, athleticism, their body moves. But nobody's saying, hey, get in the air with your leap. So we'll see how this continues to pan out. I feel like in years to come with what pitchers look like. However, I feel like a leap will lead to more replants, which is still illegal. Like you can't repush or replant after you leap. That still would be an illegal pitch. But inevitably, people coming in the air will lead to more replants, which will lead to more illegal pitches. And why I think that I don't think that we should have changed the rule, because one thing is going to open another can of worms for the other.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, because it was one of the reasons why they changed that. You think it was because how many were called and it was like inconsistent?
It is hard to be consistent with it because the umpires are seeing it in real time. And I think it's hard to see in real time. And as an umpire who's calling it down there in the field, you want to be 100% sure. Like you're probably not going to call it if you're 80%. 90%. Like you want to, in order to call it, you want to be 110% sure to call it. And with so many games on TV and slow motion replay, it was causing more eyes and attention to be like, oh, well, Ashley Burkhart leaps, her foot comes in the air an inch, you know, when she pushes out. But live, you couldn't really see it. But because we have so many games on TV and all the replays and very, very slow motion, I think it just drew more attention. So the other thing is the one-way communication devices for defense, which is a big where coaches can now call pitches and not have to do like the numbers. You'd see them in the dugout be like 5, 4, 3, and then everybody would look at their wristband and try to find it on the chart. Now they have what looks like just like an Apple Watch, and it comes up. It could say curve, zone 2, or outside. They can make it be whatever they want to be to relay the pitch call to the pitcher and the catcher, and the defense can wear it as well. And you can call defensive plays. Like if you had a first and third play or a shift that you wanted to put on, you can also put that in the one-way communication device. So we only have that for defense right now. That's not for the offensive side of things yet. That's still like the old school way.
Was it just pitchers wearing it, or do you see other players wearing it too?
Yeah, other players will wear it too. Yeah. And then some people like either aren't using it, like they're sticking with the old school way for whatever reason. Or I know some teams were having, this is like real life, technology issues with them, and they stopped working in game or in between games. And so they had to revert back to the old school way too.
Wow. So many changes. It's wild.
There are a lot of, and I mean, and that's just some of them, like having a third assistant. That's huge for a sport. Before, you could have a head coach and 2 paid assistant coaches, and now you can have an extra. The obstruction rule is in a whole league of its own, and some video review things change as well. But those are more, I feel like, minor than the 3 things that we just talked about that you like are more likely going to be able to see.
Yeah. And I'm sure teams are going to struggle with some of these like early, and hopefully they kind of go away by the end. But that's the wild thing is these, you know, big tournaments that are happening earlier in the year, you're going to see, you know, things that, you know, miscommunications, like some of that technology stuff, like it's inevitable that not everything's going to be perfect. So those people that are, you know, shaming these coaches for not, you know, being able to do all these things. There's a lot of things that are changing that we're all having to adapt to. So interesting. I know a lot of people that are listening, they want to be able to tune into games. Maybe it's D1 all the way to maybe D3. I don't know if you know how to watch those games, but what are some of those platforms that I know you're working for ESPN, so you're going to probably talk about those first, but where and how can people find their favorite teams and go watch them?
I feel like this could be its own podcast. That could be like a mini pod for like 10 minutes. Probably. I did make a post about it because it can get very confusing.
I'll tag it for sure.
First and foremost, you need the ESPN app. Like, I guess if you are somebody that just watches softball in your home and you watch it through your cable, you don't. But I just think that you need the ESPN app to be able to watch it everywhere. If ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU is included in like your cable package, right? You're able to watch any of the games that are like on TV and you can watch it on the app on the go. There's the elevated like sports cable packages. You know, there's like the basic one and then you can do like an add-on. I feel like whether it's like DirecTV or I have Fubo TV or YouTube TV, like usually there's that like additional sports package. Mm-hmm. And when you add that on, you get SEC Network and ACC Network. All of those are a part of ESPN. Like ESPN owns ACC Network and SEC Network. So like if you add on the sports package, you get access to so many more games and not just the ones that are like on the real TV, but you get what's called like the SEC Plus or ACC Extra. And those are all like just streamed. Like you would never be able to watch them on like a real cable TV, but you're able to watch them through the app. So like any ACC Network game, even stream like or SEC, like you're able to watch so much. So start there. And then you also can add on the ESPN Plus subscription, which is totally different than anything else that I just said.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's so wild. I will put the post. It is confusing. But the reason why I wanted you to mention is because, you know, back when we played, rarely were we on TV, which is wild and nuts. I mean, I guess I was on the Big Ten Network a little bit, but like even then it's one network, but there's so many options to watch. And so if you really want to watch your favorite team, some of my favorite tips are, hey, just go to their Twitter and say like every game day, they'll tell you where you can watch if you can. And I know a lot of teams that are playing on ESPN Plus, it was a no-brainer for me to get this because one, I was watching my sister play and, you know, I had friends on other teams, but there are so many games. What was it like 3,200 games that are going to be on ESPN platforms?
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
And you can watch, like I have an Apple TV. I can watch 4 games at one time through the ESPN app because of the Apple TV. So like, that's a win for me. Like, I want to be able to watch. There's so many on, like, but to your point, like, go to the team's Twitter and they always tell you how to watch it because sometimes it'll be like on the Mountain West streaming network, which is just a link that you click on and it takes you to the website and you're able to see the full broadcast for absolute free. Like, they're so different. There's Flow Sports, which like the Mary Netter tournament this weekend, the Puerto Vallarta tournaments the past 2 weekends have been on. Like, that's a separate subscription. So really the best way is just to follow the team and to go and like look at their tweet. That is their game day tweet to see how to watch it.
Yeah. And from like an educational standpoint, I wanted to mention this. Somebody said it the other day, how his daughter and him were like watching a game and they loved that, you know, ESPN Plus, you never know what you're going to get. Like sometimes you're going to get one camera and it's just panning the whole field. But like what an opportunity to watch someone in your position read balls in the outfield. You don't normally get to do that when, you know, the camera's just on the hitter. You don't see the jumps. And so I was just thinking about that. Like, even though some of the quality isn't as good, like use it to your advantage. I was watching my sister's game, same thing. She's at Illinois State now. And I was like watching the outfielders and I'm just like, that was a really good read, you know, and you can kind of like see the angles. And it's like, you don't really get to see that unless it's like an ESPN top 10 play. So
yeah, that's such a good point. How the infielders set every pitch, the shifts that the defense are going to have. Yeah. And you can also tell too, like from the angle that you're talking about where it's like above home plate, you just see the entire field. You can see great movement, like side to side movement from the pitcher too, with the curveball and a screwball breaking away. So yeah, it is a totally different angle and you're able to see a lot of different things.
Yes, yes. Okay, well, wrapping up here, I need to know just a couple fun like questions. I know there was a lot of offense, so it might be hard for you to choose. But like, what are some of those like games that either you've called or you've noticed that have been like huge? Oh my gosh, this is crazy news for the softball world.
I don't know. Crazy news for the softball.
I would say like, shocking games that have happened this year.
Okay. Oklahoma State, Georgia was shocking because Oklahoma State was ahead early. Like they were dominating. And then Lexi Kilfoyle for Oklahoma State, who's supposed to be, their NCS, their ace pitcher, like All American, came in to close out the game. But Georgia had a pinch hit 3-run home run to tie it and came back to win. Like that was huge because Oklahoma State had seemed to just be rolling through that game. And then it's crazy how at any level, Ash, that a coach can make a decision for the pitching change and you think it's going to work. It's planned. You're like, you're going to put her in. And then she just doesn't do what you think she's going to do. Or the team, maybe she's doing great, but the team is just ready for her. Like this game seemed to have been. So that was definitely one that stuck out in my mind because that was just so clutch by Georgia and a good come from behind win.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on UCLA so far?
I'm a little worried for their little pitching staff. I really am. We talked about deep pitching staffs and they just don't have that this year. And maybe something will change. Maybe something will click. I know that their head coach talked a little bit about injuries here and there. So maybe they'll get healthy and things will work out for them. But I have a feeling they're going to give up a lot of runs this year, but they have the offense to score a lot of runs too. So I feel like they're going to have to win in different ways than they have in the past.
Yeah. Do you agree with a lot of people saying how we've had such seasoned pitchers recently, 5th year, 6 years, like they've been doing it forever. And us maybe not having a lot of them anymore. Is that maybe a big reason as well? Why the offense you think was great? Or what's your take?
I just think that pitchers just aren't developing the way that they used to. I think that you have really good freshmen, and last year's freshman class had a few gems as well. And so I think that you're seeing a big separation from the people who are the aces, who are just, being able to mow through hitters, even as freshmen, compared to the next in line. I don't know that spectrum would end, but like, I just don't think that we're developing pitchers on the level that we need to be developing pitchers. And that's an entire different conversation. But I think it's causing a wide variety of like you're getting really great pitchers, but then people behind them are not where they should be.
Mm, interesting. Well, I guess they need to go take your courses then.
Yeah. I think it has to do with how fast they're moving back, Ash, to 43 feet and changing balls. So again, different conversation for a different time, but I think there's some things like need to change in our sport to help pitching. And I think that that could be a big one that can help develop pitchers at younger ages and get them more confident.
I love it. I know you probably hate this question because you probably get it a lot, but what do you see happening this season? What are your top predictions that we can maybe look for?
I think Oklahoma's win streak will break. It's like at 62 games right now. I don't think I foresee them going the entire season without losing. So that one's kind of a broad one. They're still a great team. They're the best team in our sport right now. They won 3 national championships in a row, but they're going to have to lose at some point because everybody else just, I feel like, is gunning for them, like getting better.
Yeah.
A team like Texas is playing the way that they're playing to enter this year is, they're going to meet up, those two teams. And I feel like Texas looks really great. So yeah, I think that's good. And I think the SEC is going to be really good this year. That's definitely, I think, a theme. Like the bottom of the SEC with how they finished last year, I feel like is a lot stronger this year. So top to bottom, I feel like the SEC looks really great. And then watch the Pac-12. This is the last year of the Pac-12 to play as a conference. And they have the most national championships in our sport. 5 different teams from the Pac-12 have won a national championship, which is unparalleled to all the other conferences out there. So it's just a shame that this is the last year that they're going to be the Pac-12. And if you know anything about our sport, our history is in the Pac-12, like from the West Coast. And it's just a shame that this is going to be the last year that they'll be all playing each other. So just kind of soaking up some good rivalries like that, like UCLA, Arizona, that's just like the best rivalry in our sport. And they won't be in the same conference anymore moving forward after this year.
I know it's wild to think like this time next year, what are we going to be talking about in regards to that stuff? It's nuts. But I agree. Let's all definitely pay attention to that because they're probably going to have a lot of motivation behind them each time they play each other this year. So that's such great insight. Where can people follow you? I mean, it's pretty clear. You are all over socials. You love Facebook. I mean, if you are a parent or a coach listening, please follow her on Facebook. But where do you like to hang out most?
Yeah, Facebook. I'm talking to all the parents on Facebook, and I know that none of the younger kids are on there. That's okay. I'll talk to the adults all day. So on Facebook, you just type in my name, Amanda Scarborough. My page will come up. And then at Amanda Scarborough on Instagram and at A Scarborough on X. It's so weird not to say Twitter on X.
I just say Twitter. I know. It's fine.
No.
I hope I don't get sued. Thanks for having
me. Watch a lot of softball. There are so many good games coming up, and we're just in February, but somehow games are going by so fast. And
I know
there's so many different ways to watch. So go check it out. Find a role model. Find some inspiration. Find some new coaching techniques. Like, there's so much to see to watch while you watch these games. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just grateful for your time because I know how busy you are, especially in between weekends. But get some rest. We have another big weekend ahead. Where are you going to be this weekend?
I'm going to be in Austin. I have Texas, Stanford, Colorado State, and Louisiana here. And I am from Austin. So it's nice to have some home games.
Yeah, you don't have to travel. Well, we will enjoy listening to you all season. And I'm so excited for people to listen to this one. Thanks, Amanda.
Bye.
Man, if you noticed, we were only talking for 30 minutes, but I feel like it was a full hour. We talked about so many things. And can you believe Amanda literally predicted that Oklahoma's win streak was going to be broken? And this past weekend, it was actually broken. Holy smokes. In the show notes, you're going to be able to find the link to her previous episode on the podcast, a link to her entire breakdown of how to follow and watch college softball this season. She did a lot of digging here, and it could be an entire article written on Facebook, but I will tag the link there. And also links of how to follow Amanda on social media. Like she said, she's on Facebook a lot talking to parents. She's talking about how you can encourage your athlete a bit more on the mound. She talks about college softball, of course, and so many more things. But if you want to follow her there, that link is in the show notes, along with her Instagram and her Twitter, where she does a lot of breakdown on college softball on Twitter. Big fan of that. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of When the Cleats Come Off. If you enjoyed the episode, please do me a favor and share this with a friend. And also, if you love it, write me a review so I can get this podcast in more ears of people who can learn and listen from this podcast. We have a community on Facebook called the When the Cleats Come Off community. If you want to keep talking about college softball, keep talking about this episode or any other previous episode, go hang out there. That is for all of the podcast junkies to talk softball. Thanks once again for tuning in. And don't forget to stay awkward, stay humble, and keep smiling. And I'll see you next week.